Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I want to say hello and good morning to Predators head coach John Hines. He's on the line with us. Good morning, Coach. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. How are you? I'm excellent.
You've been safe, and how's life in quarantine times been the last couple of months?
Yeah, it's been it's been good. My family moved down to Nashville, so we've been safe. We've been quarantined. Everyone's healthy. It's been good to really be able to explore the Nashville area. You know, we haven't been able to meet a lot of people, but just be able to drive around and see all the downtown and all the different things around Nashville. So the kids should be acclimated and had a chance to get some work done, and it's been good. You know, I can't complain. We're all healthy. We've had some time to recharge a little bit and plan out. So feeling good, ready to go. Hopefully we can get back at some point soon here.
Good to hear, and we certainly agree with that sentiment for sure. We've talked to a number of people around your team that have kind of relayed the same message, that everybody felt really good. Unfortunately, with the direction of where this was going, it felt like it was coming together as play halted before you guys were getting ready to play the Maple Leafs. Do you feel the same way? Did you feel like maybe everybody was comfortable with the system, the team was coming together, things were going in the right direction when everything halted?
Yeah, it certainly was. I think that some of the system things and some of the tactical things that we made adjustments to, we're becoming much more natural to the players, which is something that's always going to be a work in progress, particularly when you come in mid-season. I think the biggest thing really came in just the team dynamic started to come together, the mental toughness, the belief, the resiliency that you need to be able to play night in and night out, the belief in each other and some of the accountability things really started to click, and I think guys really started to play more for each other and with each other than before. And I think that's really where that feeling comes in. And once you can get that the culture, the chemistry, the belief, the resiliency, that mental toughness and belief that you need to win, then the tactics usually take care of themselves.
That message was pretty consistent with you from day one, and you said it. If you didn't say it, every day, you were pretty darn close to exactly what you just said to us. Were you surprised at all that mentality was there, that you had to say that message over and over again to a room that had been through all the wars that they'd been through over the last couple of years in the playoffs and long regular seasons and have had a lot of success?
No, not necessarily. I think that every year is different. And every year your team changes, guys get older, you add people to your team. You can never really rely on what's going on in the past. I think you can draw some lessons from the past, but every year presents different challenges. Every year you have to, you have to be ready to mentally fight and compete and physically be able to bring that night in and night out. And I just think that, it happens to teams at certain times, and when you go through some struggles or you go through some of the changes that happened to the team earlier in the year, sometimes that belief and the identity and the mental strength that you need, it goes away, and you got to find a way to get it back. And that was one of the things. I think a lot of teams go through it, but it was what the challenge was presented with this group this year.
John, when you came in here, when you had a little bit of a gap in between when it ended in New Jersey and before you started here, you had a little time to reflect. Your experience as a head coach on the bench for those years in Newark with the Devils and then starting up a fresh start in Nashville with the Predators team, did you take the same approach or did you sit back? Because I think we all feel like you have to change and evolve constantly. In whatever you do and get, times change and you have to change. Did you take that approach or did you just feel like what you have in place works, it fits you, and for whatever reason it didn't play out the way you thought, at the end or in New Jersey, and that it could play out here? What was your approach when you came in here?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think every experience you get, if you can take the lessons out of it and find ways to improve. And I think there's some things that myself and our staff and everyone, we did well in New Jersey, and there's some things that that needed to be changed or adapted, or certain things. I think you look back on certain decisions or certain ways that you handled certain situations. So those are the things you reflect back on in between the time between jobs. And then when you came, you know, when you come here, you also, I think, understand you have to coach the team that you have too. You have to coach the players. What's the group that's in front of you that you know, what are their challenges and what are their strengths? And I think one of the big things for me was really trying to understand where this group was at, what did they need mentally, physically, tactically, emotionally. And I think you have your job as a coach, in my experience, is you have to try to give that group what it needs. And sometimes it's not always maybe what you particularly want, or sometimes exactly how you want to play every situation, but you have to play to you have to coach to the player's strengths. And that was, you know, something I look back on and I tried to do when coming into this book.
I know you've said, you know, when referencing, you know, about players maybe in the old system and under Peter Laviolette, well, you weren't here, and that's more than fair. So this question is not about what was going on when Peter Laviolette was head coach. It's about just trying to see through your eyes, what do you think was happening and why it was working in your system? But two guys obviously come to mind where things got a whole lot better with Kyle Turris on your watch, and Mikael Granlund, really, I mean, it was the best stretch we had seen since he was traded here from Minnesota. So I guess the question is, what do you think through your eyes was working for them under your system?
Well, I think sometimes that when a coach has been in a place for a bit, or players have been there, and some guys play well, some guys thrive, some guys go up and down. So I think with Kyle, for instance, he came in and it was basically, look, it's a fresh start. You know, I'm a new coach coming in, and that was the message to the team that, you know, Lavi had gone through what he had gone through, and I'm a different person, different coach. I don't have the same experience with the team that he had. So it was an opportunity for guys to come in and play, and the best players were going to play. The guys that played the best were going to play. And Kyle himself took advantage of that opportunity. I think, you know, to be honest, it was just a fresh start, and to his credit, he took the opportunity and ran with it. And I think when you look at Granlund, you know, he was fairly similar. I think one of the things that happened with both of them that did help, I think, was they both found their way onto a little bit more special teams, whether it's power play or penalty kill. And I think sometimes just a player gets that type of confidence, or they earn that type of role, sometimes it just helps them get a couple extra minutes. They feel better about themselves, better about the game, and then they just continue to go and play.
We're talking to John Hines, head coach of the Nashville Predators. And, Coach, there's a lot of – we've been picking the brains of a lot of coaches because they lead groups, and we're all, as a community, as a society right now, starting to work our way out into the fog a little bit here as we try to get moving and stuff. So what do you think about in terms of just trying to attack this whole thing with everything going around us? There's so much uncertainty in things. I mean, for example, you were just talking about just trying to stay in communication with the guys right now, and you don't know exactly which path to take, but you know there's going to be a time where it's time to take the next step forward.
Yeah, correct. I mean, we've done, myself and the rest of the coaching staff have really tried to stay in touch with the players. We've done some Zoom calls. We've had some, you know, individual Zoom call meetings. We've had rotated the coaches around with different players, so everyone's had an opportunity to talk with everybody and, you know, try to stay connected and keep connected together. And then, you know, we do have several plans in place for whatever's going to come our way. And I think, you know, the most important thing is, so you have to be, I think, in today's day and age, you have to be okay with uncertainty. That's the times we're in. And I think it's the teams and the people that they're okay with that challenge. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk with our players about is we don't know what it's going to be, but we have to be ready. There's going to be no excuses. We've got to have a plan in place. We have to have that type of mentality. And I think if we do that, we'll give ourselves the best chance to be successful.
It's such a unique challenge. And you used the term high stakes hockey when you were on the first Zoom call I think you did with the media after the pause happened, and we're all looking ahead, and there's a lot of speculation, but certainly there's not going to be a whole lot of games before you really have to have success, or this is going to be a pretty short run here. So That's a very unique challenge to just mentally start preparing for right now.
Yeah, it is. It's really mentally and physically. I think it's two parts of it. You know, once we get the green light of knowing, you know, a date when we're going to be back, I think it's really important that, you know, the players get back in. We send them the video. We want to be really detailed in our teaching and our pointers to get them back mentally engaged of how we want to play, what our identity is. That's the first step in really getting them back engaged of the concepts that we want to be able to play with. And then when they come back in, we've got to do a good job with our strength and conditioning and athletic trainers as far as, you know, the progression of coming back and getting them back into skating, feeling the puck, doing things with tempo, being able to do those things day after day, but then also ramping it up to a level where when you do get into these games that we're going to play, we don't have a long time to get ready. So I think the mental and the physical part of it have to be combined. And it's an exciting challenge. We've certainly spent some time on it. But I think it'll really get ramped up for us, too, once we get maybe a little bit more clarity on dates and timing.
John, you played in the Boston University hockey program. We were just talking to Tim Corbin, the head baseball coach at Vanderbilt, and they've become one of those programs over the years now that is getting known for producing a lot of major league talent, and a lot of people want to study how they have done it, why is it happening there. Boston University, it dawns on me, there's a lot of that same thing. It goes back for a long way now. There's a long line of players that have gone on to a lot of success. What is it about the culture at Boston University's program that has led to so many success?
Well, I think the first thing it started with Jack Parker. You know, Coach Parker had been there for a long time. It was a culture that was established by him and maintained by him for a long period of time. And you know, I think the ability to bring in, you know, high quality players, but guys that they had the right work ethic, they had a blue collar mentality to go along with their talent. And you know, I think when you have that type of a culture where, you know, your off-ice training is going to be intense and hard and everybody buys into it, the way that you're going to practice, the competitiveness that you want to play with. I think when the players that come through the program, you know, there's some pride and responsibility. And what does it mean to be a carrier? And I think it's that type of identity and culture that when you can get in and then you bring in highly talented or talented people into that culture and they believe in it, it allows guys to get better, improve, push each other. And you know, that's what had gone on at Boston University. And it comes to, a strong culture, but also I think you have to have good, high-quality people to continually bring in the culture to maintain it.
We're talking to John Hines, the head coach of the Nashville Predators, and you spoke earlier about Mikhail Granlund and how that's worked under your system. But another player that I want to talk about specifically is Ryan Johansson, and he'll be the first. He did an interview with Joe Rexroder of The Athletic, saying that, you know, this hasn't been his best year, that he feels like he's let some of his teammates down with his play, and that he wants to play better and hold himself to a higher standard being a number one center. When you, even though you've only known him for half this season and coached him for half the season, when you hear one of your top players take that kind of responsibility, what goes through your mind as the head coach?
Well, it's a good thing. I mean, it's very consistent. You know, I read the article and talked to Ryan afterwards about it. And the thing I liked was, you know, it was the same conversation he and I had at the end of the year. And so he's, you know, I think he's self-admittedly, there needs to be more from him. He recognizes that fact. He's not hiding from it. He's put some processes in place during this break to move forward as far as his training and getting himself ready to be able to come back and play at a level that we need him to play at. So I think it's a good thing. Guys are going to go through some ups and downs in their career. And I think the first step in it is just, you know, he owned it. And I think that's it's good on him and the fact that he owned it. And now the next step is really let's put the work in and put the plan in place to help him get to the level that he and we need him to be.
So with that said, does that, you know, give you some more excitement of if and when the season comes back, or even if this is planning for next season, knowing that a player like that with the type of talent that Johansson has, that he's motivated, that's going to come in and not only affect his game but those around him?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really exciting. You know, I've had a lot of very good discussions I've gotten to know a lot of the players a lot better over this break and feel like I know the team better. I know them better. They know me better. I think that there's, I'm really excited to be able to come back and work with the guys. And I think the motivation level is high for Ryan and from some other guys. I think our team in general, there was a lot of struggles this year. And I think the fact that we were coming together and there was a good belief system and a good feeling around what we were doing. So those are all motivational factors, and those are things that I think are exciting for the coaching staff and for the players. So when we do get back, that we're ready to push each other and make sure we're at the highest level we can be at to compete.
You obviously knew what you were getting in Pecorine because you've seen him, from afar and know the type of reputation that he has. But when you got here, I mean, it was a year that was up and down, not only for the whole team, but for him. UC Saros has taken the reins and essentially been your number one goaltender. But what are some things that you've been able to learn from Pekka in this role that he's currently in that maybe you didn't know?
Well, one is I've heard, but the type of character that Pekka Rinne has, the type of competitiveness and professionalism he has, makes him who he is. It was really impressive to see that. I think, I thought he had some really good stretches of hockey since I've been in here. And then, at the end, when Juice kind of took the reins, it wasn't so much necessarily that Peck didn't play well enough to play. It was just that Juice was playing so well and was so hot that, we had no time to waste. So, he was hot. We had a lot of games in a short amount of time. And Pex was all on board with that. He was about the team. He was about getting in the playoffs. He wanted success. He certainly wanted to play, but I think he understood the situation, supported you, supported the team, and supported me and our coaching staff. And it was different for him. It was the first time where he had been in a situation where he wasn't going to be in every other night or every night. And, understanding what he needs to do as a pro to be ready in those things was a new experience for him. And he embraced it. I think he learned a lot from him. I had a very good discussion with him since the break about the things he's learned. But I can tell you right now that he's not ready to give the reins away. I mean, what he's doing here. He's in fantastic shape. He's, I think, rejuvenated. He's ready to compete. And I think that's great. I think it's great for Peck. It's great for our team. It's going to be great for Juice. And I think Peck is going to come back. And he's got the fire. So that's another guy, that I think coming back as a coach you're excited about because of what he's doing and how he feels about where his game was and where his game can be. And that's exciting because he's a heck of a player.
No doubt about it. I don't think anybody's surprised to hear that. If there's anything we've learned about Peck over the years, he is certainly competitive for sure. Enjoy the weather today, Coach. It's beautiful outside. I think the Blue Angels are going to fly over in about 35 minutes, so maybe you can catch that. And thanks for the visit. You and the family continue to be safe.
I will. Thanks for the time, guys. I appreciate it. I'm definitely going to look at those Blue Angels here soon. It's going to be
right.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is going to be really right. Cool. Predators head coach John Hines, and we do appreciate him joining us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We'll be back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, if you own or manage a small business and you're open, you want to tell people about it? We got Free Business Friday, as we said here on this Thursday. And right now, starting tomorrow, it'll be our third installment of Free Business Friday. We're going to offer you free advertising to all the businesses out there that are safely open and working. It's a no-cost, no-catch offer for you. You can visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. That's thegamenashville.com/FBF. For more information, Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. It's been a big hit, and it'll be a big hit again tomorrow. And if you haven't jumped in there yet, you should do it. If you're a small business and you own it or you run it and you'd like to get the word out that you guys are back safely open and we'll tell everybody what you guys do, it's very simple. Just go to the website and sign up. So hope to see a lot of you doing that here in today. Let's do this today because tomorrow is Friday. Good stuff there from Predators head coach John Hines. Paul Feinbaum coming up at high noon as he gets ready for his show today. And then Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet in 31 Thoughts at 1 o'clock. Anything jump out to you guys with Coach Hines?
I think we've had some really good perspective from a couple of really good leaders. I think at least this is how, this is what I try to think about, you know, as we all try to start moving forward, right? We're all in that mode, right? As Tim Corbin said, you know, people, they got energy, right? We want to get moving, but we have to be smart about it. I think, you know, I like hearing what leaders of groups are doing to try to address their group, right? As we start moving out into what is still going to be an unknown fluid situation for a while, right? Because we all have to make those decisions. We have to, you know, we have to make, help make the decisions for our families, you know, for our businesses, for our, you know, the schools, the, you know, governors, mayors, all of those things, principals, you know, there's a lot of people in those positions that we're looking at it through a sports prism, but I just thought it was great to hear from people that have, you know, the perspective of leading groups, right? Yep, where you, sure. You're going through adversity, right? You know, you're trying to get a team through a tough stretch. You know, you've come in, the team needs help, right? And something needs to be fixed. You know, he's gone through that. And now, you know, we've got a brand new experience in front of him. What a year for John Hines. You know,
honestly,
he starts the year as the coach of the Devils.
Willie, you laugh at that. We don't really know each other yet. We're working on that. We didn't, you know, he came in and then you guys took off. And so I really haven't been around him much yet. So I was like, he doesn't know me. So it would have been obviously very lighthearted and innocent. But, you know, I was like, maybe I'll just wait till we get to know each other a little bit better. But I was honestly going to say that at the beginning, like, man, you must just want to scrap 2019 and 2020 and just start over. Right? Get ready for a new season, new year. Because, yeah, I mean, it is – he goes through, you know, just brutal. The Devils were awful. He gets shown the door. There's a break there. Then he gets hired here. And then, you know, he's got to jump right in the day of, introduce himself, you know, to the team. Hi, I'm your head coach. Now let's go play the Bruins. And then now the pandemic. I mean, yeah, I was going to make a lighthearted joke about that, but I was like, yeah, maybe I'll wait.
I'll say this, though.
Just so he doesn't take it wrong.
Yeah, and probably a smart move on your part. But to your point, and I know that you are being lighthearted in that of wanting to put 2019, 2020 behind you and just forget that. The thing that stood out to me to answer your question was when he was talking about his conversation with Ryan Johansson and the article that Joe Rex wrote had in The Athletic. And I know that you use the phrase a lot, and I agree with it, that they're words, need to see action, but he's owning it. And John Hines said that he owns it. And so I say that to say this, that I believe that this team can be very dangerous if they come back. And because everyone's had that time to step back, including the head coach, that this has been a whirlwind. So, yes, there's been a lot of bad things, obviously, and you'd want to put this year behind him. But I get that sense. They want to come back and see how this thing looks at the finish. That, and I know every team can say that, but especially a team like Nashville that was building some momentum before the stoppage. That's what really stood out to me in that interview, that I can just hear it in his voice, that there's that hunger to get back because he knows that they could have something special and go on a run.
Well, obviously everybody's rooting for that statement to be 100% true and spot on, and everybody wants that to happen. The only thing I would caution you is to say it that strongly is we just have no idea, including John Hines or anybody, any coach in the league, what they're going to look like coming back, right? They've never been in a position like this.
Yeah,
nobody's
ever gone through
this. There's no model for us to know how in the world, no matter how good a team was playing or how bad a team was playing going into the stoppage, what they're going to come out of the stoppage and look like. I mean, there's just no way to know. I'd like for everything you say to be absolutely true. It feels right, but I also then go, but how in the world will we know? I mean, you know, months and months off, how anyone's going to respond coming out of this? We don't even know how the product's going to look.
Yeah, we don't. But one thing I sensed in his voice, and I don't know if you guys would agree with me or not, but I sensed that there was a lot of momentum, you know, that, you know, nothing has been announced or anything, but it certainly didn't sound like a coach who was like, well, I don't know if we're going to play or not play. You know, it sounded like there's going to be a next step here of, you know, getting the guys back. It did seem to me like it's moving in that direction. Did you guys pick up on that? Do you guys agree?
Well, it didn't feel like Blake Snell's comments, that's for sure. That's what you're saying. I don't know. I mean, it depends on who you listening to him. Yeah, I would agree. But, I mean, then you listen to Matt Duchesne, and Matt Duchesne doesn't, paint a picture of it sounding like it's coming back, anytime soon.
But that was a while back, though. Matt Duchesne's was how many weeks now? 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's been other players where there's been some players you listen to or people in the league you listen to and you feel good after you hear them, right? And then there's been others you're like, oh, what does that mean, type of deal.
So
I've been kind of a mixed bag on the read of whether to feel good or not feel good.
I just think different players and coaches just go about it different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the best way to put it, that Ryan – and I took away with my interview with Ryan Johansson, the one that Ryan and I did on the rundown. I walked out of that not thinking, oh, man, he doesn't want to come back or he doesn't think they're coming back. I took it as he's being realistic. It's an unknown situation, and there were a lot of variables that were ever-changing, and I felt like he was looking at it that way. So he could – if we had a conversation with him today, it could be different. And that's been the case for a lot of people that have gone about this looking at it that way, that, hey, it the way I felt on March 30th could be different of how I felt on April 30th and could be different how I feel on May 30th. I mean, that's just how this situation is right now. It's changing every day. So I think you have to look at it that way.
Definitely.
I'm looking at the Blue Angels path. Looks like they're going to buzz by here. I want to say probably around 12:04, 12:05. Willie, you would be next. Actually, Chase, you'll be up before Willie. They're actually going to go out more. Brentwood, Williamson County, go west, and then roll through downtown. Chase, you're probably looking at 12:09, 12:10. Willie, you're looking at more about the 12:15 range. Just in case you guys wanted to know.
Okay.
I can also report that the ice cream truck has gone through my neighborhood as well. I don't know if you guys caught the music going by. So.
No, I missed that.
I don't know if he's heading east to west and will be going by your area, but it'll be on a different timetable. It'll take a little longer than the Blue Angels, I think, to cover the ground.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Is he left or right on your radio dial? They don't really have radio
right
dials
to left
anymore.
He went right to left on my radio dial based on the sound.
In what you said at the beginning, you guys know that I kind of geek out over that stuff. That's my analytics is people in leadership roles and how they – and you're right. It's well said. I mean, think about our two guests thus far, Tim Corbin and John Hines. I just liked what I heard, just kind of the leadership and their approach and how they handle. So I always perk up when I – we get into subjects like that because I do want to hear – how they handle stuff like that. And it does feel like in a short amount of time, John Hines has a real good grasp of, because if you think about it, since day one, from the minute he stepped foot, on Nashville soil and set foot in Bridgestone Arena, his message has been pretty darn consistent. I mean, he's done things a particular way, and that's the way it's looked all the way until, mid-March. And I think that's why maybe it was starting to come together, because the players figured out the same thing. They, all right, this is how this guy operates. This is what he's looking for. This is his message. We got it. All right, coach, let's go. Maybe that's what was going on behind the scenes. But I did enjoy some of his stuff that he threw out there about, talking to players and hitting on. That was a good question about Pacarina and UC Saros. Chase, how he handled that, and nobody should be surprised that Pekka still wants to be the guy, and he's a competitor for sure. But that was pretty neat to hear.
Yeah, and I was curious, too, on, you know, Ryan Johansson, because if you haven't read it, Joe Rexroad, The Athletic, and Johansson's very honest in that, because Joe asked him the question, what specifically about your game needs to be better, and Ryan said, great question. That's exactly what I've been asking myself the whole year. I'm watching myself, and I'm like, Ryan, what are you doing? That's not you. And if you're saying that to yourself and your teammates are saying, wow, we've got to get Ryan going, he's struggling, he's not himself, and you're trying to find consistency in your game and it's just not coming, that's super frustrating. And that's very telling. And again, those are he's saying the right thing, he's owning it. But I do feel like that Ryan Johansson is the caliber of player and person. You know, he's somebody we've gotten to know that he's going to back that up. He's going to try and change the things that we're struggling in. That's one of the many reasons that I would like to see them hit the ice again, because I'd be curious to see what Ryan Johansson looks like.
When we come back, guys, have you seen the Super 16 coaches of the expansion era that's been put out there by Dan Rosen of NHL.com?
I have not.
The best coaches of the expansion era, the top 16, I would request that you not.
The best coaches of... Okay, we won't look, but this is not best coaches of expansion teams. You're talking about best coaches in the expansion era. So we're talking about what year?
Since 1967 to present day.
67. When
the NHL expanded.
Went from the original six on. When they went off from
the
original six.
They're calling it the expansion era, right, when they went away from the original six. So from 1967 to present day.
Okay. I won't look.
Don't look. You're going to want to hear this, and I want you to be thinking about, you know, who they would have on this list. We'll see how many guys. Start jotting some names down and see how many of these guys you can get. Sound like fun? Great.
Sounds
like
a lot of fun.
I'm just as excited as you guys are. We'll come back and wrap up the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. The SEC is going to vote later this month on whether to bring players back to campus June 1 or June 15th. We'll talk to Paul Feinbaum about that and more from the SEC Network and ESPN. That is coming up at high noon. The tease going into the break was Dan Rosen from NHL.com has put together a Super 16 coaches of the expansion era. Since the original six, the NHL said, you know what, this is a good time for us to expand the league. And that was in 1967 to present day. And so they have come up with their best 16 coaches since the expansion era. Okay? So how about rather than you know, let's start it. Just throw out a name. Willie, I'll start with you, and I'll tell you if indeed they're on the list.
Scotty Bowman.
I mean, you know, a list like this, you've got to be able to start there, right? That's a good guess. It's a good guess, and it's number one. No surprise there. He is indeed number one. It was unanimous. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame a long time ago. Gosh, coming up on 30 years ago. But, yes, Scotty Bowman, number one. Chase.
I'm going to throw this name out there because I want to be the one to do it. Barry Trotz.
Now, why would you say Barry Trotz?
Because of... I mean, number one, I've seen him on some top 10 lists before of all time, and what he did with an
expansion
team. Barry
Trotz is on the list. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why you're bringing this up, because I would imagine that two of the three coaches in Nashville Predators history are on this list, but I wanted to bring up Barry Trotz first.
And you didn't look during the break.
I did not.
Barry Trotz is indeed on the list at number six. Number six, Barry Trotz.
I don't think you have to cheat. If you know anything about hockey and the success of coaches really in the last 20 years, I don't think you have to cheat and know that Barry Trotz should be on this list.
That was an easy one.
Okay. I'm just making sure the integrity is there. That's all I ask.
Okay.
All right, well, we're done. I just wanted to get to Barry Trotz being on the list. Okay, that's it.
I ruined it.
I figured it would take a lot longer than that. So, That was the whole point of the exercise.
Is Peter on that list?
No, we want to go. I want more of the list.
Okay, go on.
Are we not
right,
trying
go.
To guess the list?
Yeah,
here?
I wanted to build up to Bear. I did not think you guys would go there that fast.
Oh, he's an automatic. Are you kidding?
Okay.
Honestly,
well,
Peter Laviolette should be on that list. I don't know if he is or not, but
well,
he absolutely should be
how
on.
Do you know? How do you know he's not on the list? What do you mean? Have you looked?
I'm saying he's on the list.
Then guess him.
I'm guessing him.
Okay. Peter Laviolette is the guess. Dun, 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 dun. No, not on the list.
What? Come on.
Not on the
Interesting.
List. Interesting. He did. He
taking
was
three
a,
different
he,
teams to the Stanley Cup final?
He was a bubble guy. They did put the others receiving votes, and Peter Laviolette was on that list of others receiving votes.
I need
He's
to hear the rest
cup.
Of the list.
He's got the second most wins among American coaches, three different teams to the finals. You got to be kidding me.
Just the messenger, man. Mm. It's not my list.
That's wrong.
It's a bad message.
Well, tell Dan Rosen you think it's wrong. Let him know.
I'll have bone to pick with him. I'm not saying he's.
Listen here,
I don't know about top 10. You said 16?
16.
Yeah, he's in the 16. Come on.
It's a bubble guy, according to Dan Rosen. Just on the outside looking at it.
All right, so let's go Joel Quenneville, number two.
Joel
Quenneville. I don't know if I'd have him number two.
Let's see. Jeez, I wonder if he's on the list. Yeah, he's on the list. Number three. Uh-huh. Not number two.
Ooh.
Number three.
I will say... Ooh, this is tough. I'm going to say Mike Babcock, number two, but there could be another guess.
No way.
Mike Babcock, number two, no. But he is in the top 10. Number seven.
Number seven, Babcock. Okay, that's fair. Al Arbor, number two.
Number two, Al Arbor. Oh. Yep.
Okay.
So you've gotten the top.
I just think
first
in the salary
three,
cap era, I would go Quenneville a little higher because when you coach in the salary cap era, it's a little tougher to win. When
three
you,
cups.
It's like
yeah.
Al Arbor, tremendous coach, but when you had the horses in their prime and you weren't going to lose anybody, that made it a little easier, but still, Al Arbor worthy.
No, but
so
it's
Glenn
it's
Sather's
got to
be in there, right?
Go three cups in 6 years in a salary cap era. I mean, that is, yeah. Who did you say?
Glenn Sather.
Number four. So you're missing one in between Trotz. You've got the first four, and Trotz is six. You're never going to get it. You're never going to get five. I mean, never.
Never
going to
get
unless
five.
Unless you guys have cheated. If you say this, then I'm going, cheaters! You are cheaters.
Never
going
to get
Because you're never going to get five. And it's not because you don't know him. You absolutely know him, but you would never say him number five on this list.
Ken wow. Hitchcock?
All right, you cheated, Chase.
No,
you
I
have, there's
not,
no
I,
way.
No,
there's
I didn't.
No way you didn't look at this during
no,
the break.
No, I didn't
that
look at
is,
it.
That is, I'm calling right now. Marquise, get the sounder. Get a cheating sounder. He is a cheater.
I used deductive reasoning there, Darren, because you said there's no way you're going to get this, but you do know him. You absolutely know him, but there's no way you would guess him. And the first name that popped in my head was Ken Hitchcock.
I sentenced you to radio jail for the rest of the day. You did. There's no way you pulled Ken Hitchcock out of your Bellevue bottom. Come on. No way.
Willie, what name came to mind when you heard Darren and his bull?
You know what? Before he said you guys definitely know him, I was starting to search my mind for Montreal coaches going back. You
exactly.
Know, who would be?
I mean, I didn't cheat. I just Ken Hitchcock came to mind. Won a cup.
All right. Is Jacques Lemaire on the list?
You've got the top seven now. So, yes, he's number 11.
Jacques Lemaire is a good guess.
Mm-hmm.
Claude Julien?
Out. So he was others receiving votes. He
I
was,
thought about him.
He was right behind Peter Laviolette in the voting of others receiving votes.
I feel like – well, go ahead, Willie. It's your turn. I was going to say another name that I think could be outside.
So Jacques Lemaire is on. How about Pat Burns?
Pat Burns is indeed on there. Pat Burns is number nine. So you're missing eight. Eight is it for the – no, you're missing eight and ten. So I was going to say that's it for the top ten.
I'm also in my mind trying to say where would Laviolette, in my mind, jump in? These guys are all pretty legit that we've mentioned so far. Good, strong arguments. Can't really have any beef with them being on the list.
Ten was not well-liked.
John Tortorella.
Actually, he's on the list. He's on the list. He's 14.
Okay. I was going to – because I had –
that's a
I
tough call. Tortorella
over
Laviolette. I mean, that's a toss-up right there. They're both so close and such similar credentials.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. But I guess he gets the nod because he
Mike
won.
Mike Keenan.
Because he won, right? I mean,
Mike Keenan's a good guess.
Well, but I guess, I mean, Peter, so
no. Is Crispy on the list?
Crispy's not on the list. I did look. That was one thing I was very intrigued to see if Crispy would make the list and did not receive votes.
Look, I threw one out there. Mike Keenan, is he on the list in the area of not well-liked?
Yes,
was
he's
that your
number 10.
Clue
yeah.
there?
Yeah, okay. He's.
See, that's interesting.
You picked up on the hint. Yeah, Mike Keenan was 10.
Not well liked.
All right, let's go with Crispy's coach. What about Fred Shiro? Is he on the
number
list?
Number 8. Yep, number 8. So you've nailed the top 10. You got Jacques Lemaire at 11. I don't think
so
you
now
said...
we need 12, 13, 15, 16. Is that
yes,
what we're looking at?
That's correct.
Thirteen,
I think, is pretty obvious. You're not thinking of him. Pretty recent success in the last decade, and it's pretty obvious once you think of that.
Mike Sullivan?
No, he was others receiving votes.
Okay, I guess not quite long.
Mike Sullivan tenure. Was actually the number one others receiving votes.
Okay.
Peter Laviolette was 2. Claude Julien was 3.
Somebody like Lindy Ruff?
Lindy Ruff was 16.
Okay. Wow. See, now that's interesting. I think I would go Laviolette over Lindy Ruff. I mean, Lindy Ruff is very, very good, for sure.
Well, I mean, Chase, you've got it there in front of you. Just go on and read the rest of the names.
I don't have it in front of me.
I mean, come
the
on.
Accusations, very sharp.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about these accusations, too. I really do. Come on. What do you got?
Have it
what,
in front
right
of
there
me.
In front of you, what do you got? What's 15?
I have no idea. I don't have it in front of me. I have a list of all-time coaches, and so I can remember some of the names from before my time.
Okay.
That's what I have. Okay, we have a vote on the text line that I think is a good one. Daryl Sutter.
That's who I was looking for. 13 recent success in the last decade.
Two cups. You can't argue with that.
Yeah,
Greg.
Two cups with
success
the
in more than one place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he right. He had had
he would
he had
be
had
in the not overly well liked at all times.
No,
but,
no doubt. Yeah, but I felt like if I threw that in there too, then it would have been an obvious. So Pat Quinn was 12.
Pat Quinn, I knew. I was thinking. I know Pat Burns, and I was thinking, who's the other Pat? I was trying to think of Pat Quinn. Couldn't do
Pat
it.
Pat Quinn 12. Daryl Sutter 13. Torts 14. You got Lindy Ruff, 16, and Roger Nielsen, 15.
Roger Nielsen was the one guy we left. Okay, that's the one guy he hadn't mentioned yet.
There's your top 16.
Crispy had many battles with Roger Nielsen over the years. He's got some great stories of Roger Nielsen.
I bet he does.
Fantastic character of the game.
I bet he does. But how about Trotsky? Number 6 on this list. How about that? Good for him.
That's awesome.
By the way, I would take Peter Laviolette over Roger Nielsen for sure.
Yeah, Peter should be in the top 16.
Come on.
He should totally be.
Yeah, I'm trying to – I don't know. I mean, I guess the best thing to do – I was going to say – but, I'm trying to, look at how many – it wasn't just Dan Rosen. Dan Rosen, he pulled a bunch of riders and, a lot of NHL.com, you know, people. So I mean, Tracy Myers is on there, Sean Rourke, Dan Rosen. So it looks like there's about 10 of them. So and they all did their votes, and that's how they came up. But Peter Laviolette did make, let's see, Peter Laviolette, I see him like 16 on a couple lists. There's a 14 for Peter Laviolette, a 14 for Peter Laviolette, a 15. So it looks like he was coming in, if he made a list, it was around 14, 15, 16. But not enough votes to get in the top 16. So there you go.
Fair.
Thought you would enjoy that. We will come back. Paul Feinbaum, SEC Network and ESPN to start the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.